You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Rose Podcast. Oh man, I've been connected to this wonderful lady for 10 years?
I think so.
We might be at 10. Longer. We're celebrating a decade. Yeah, it might be longer. Louisa Jewell and I go way back now. You are the president and founder of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association, which is I went to your first, was it the first one?
I think you were at the first, and I think you were at the second, and you were at several, the third.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of running a workshop one year, which was so fun in Toronto. But I wanted to have you on the podcast because you are a trailblazer in the space of psychology, of healing, of mental health. You have a book called Wire Your Brain for Confidence. So I'm very excited to have you on here because the problem has been set up perfectly by society that we are in, for sure, the largest mental health crisis in the history of humanity. And we need solutions. So I'm really excited to talk to someone who's been so immersed in that space and works with people and teaches people. And you also are so much part of all the movements collectively on a national level and influencing internationally. In what does that look like? And how do we actually move the needle? So welcome.
Thank you so much. And Mark, I have always admired your work over the years, and I just feel so honored to be connected with you. And thank you for inviting me here on your podcast.
Well, I'm so pumped to have you here. I mean, these are conversations that we have anyways, so we might as well record one and share it, you know? And what's going on in the space of mental health is, it's just atrocious. It's sad. It's an emergency in so many levels. And I think since the advent of pharmaceutical interventions in every aspect of health, we're no healthier than we were. And no. It's not to say that there isn't a place, but it certainly isn't working what we're doing.
You know, and I think if you look at those traditional ways of dealing with mental illness, certainly the first route seems to be, well, let's get you on some medication. Mm-hmm. And that's not bad for someone who's kind of catatonic or unable to get out of bed and they need medication to be able to engage in their lives. And so there's a time and a place for medication. The problem is when it's only medication that seems to be the route that is suggested for people, and people don't know what other options there are in terms of how they could improve things for themselves. And I tend to think that, so if you're having a heart attack, you're going to want to go to the heart surgeon. And if you're in a really bad state and you need medication, then I think that's really great and can be very helpful for people. But then the next step that a heart surgeon does not do, that maybe another nutritionist or exercise physiologist would say, was, well, what caused the heart attack? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we can go back and see, what was your lifestyle like? What were you eating? What were you exercising? Were you moving your body? What were your parents like? What, you know, did they have certain health issues? Could this have been something that was hereditary, that you inherited in terms of your DNA, that could be contributing to this health crisis in your life? And I think that doesn't always take place, or they identify things that were from your childhood that needs to be addressed, which I think, again, can be really helpful when we go through therapy and we can figure out what is the actual cause of my depression. So let's get on some medication, but then let's understand what are the causes, and then let's work on through talk therapy. And there's so many different kinds of therapies now that are so effective, and people have to find the right therapy for them in terms of improving their own mental health that get them to a state of being okay, where they can function. And I remember asking a psychologist once, how do you know the line between when you're just depressed, you know, in a depressed mood, or when you're actually in a clinical depression? And she said, it's when you cannot cope with the regular stressors of life. And I thought that was really good advice, because throughout my lifetime, when I have really go through really difficult times, and I call these kind of the Olympics of my mental health journey, right? When I'm going, you know, when I'm going through a divorce, when my husband died, you know, these are kind of the Olympics of life. And if you think about it, people who go to the Olympics, they don't fire all their coaches and say, well, I'm at the Olympics, so I, you know, so I'm good. They say, wow, this is a really big deal. I better get more coaches and get more people helping me at the Olympics. And that's kind of how I look at mental health, that sometimes you need that extra help. Sometimes you need a therapist to get you through those really, really difficult times. When my husband died, I had never dealt with something like that before. I mean, my parents had died, but you know, that you kind of expect that. They were in their 90s. They were, you know, I was okay with that struggle, as sad as it was. But when my husband died, I didn't know how to manage that. I did, you know, and so that's when I went and got some help. And I think, so having that certainly can be helpful in your life, to be able to say there's medication, there's therapy. But then beyond that, how do you maintain your mental health? And I think that's the role of positive psychology, which is to inform people about how do you stay in control of your life? How do you stay resilient? What are all the tools you can use to cope better with life so that you're not stressed out, overwhelmed, burning out all the time? And also, you're happier. You're more in love. You're more engaged in your life. It's so good when you can reach those higher levels of well-being just for you, because we have one life to live.
Yeah, isn't it wild that this isn't taught in school? Like how to create, like what is the science behind thriving humans? What is it that they do? Instead, we're really taught about, I mean, you know, valuably, we're taught about things like history, etc. But we're not taught about what is it that Michael Jordan did every day? Like, what is it that people who report having really exceptional mental health do every day? What is it about people who have no mental health issues or go through things like the loss of a partner and actually go through the natural process, of course, and actually come out stronger on the other end? You know, which is, you know, you could have someone be best friends with someone else, go to war together, experience the exact same things, and one person comes back and is somehow thriving and the other person isn't. And so there's clearly something, a set of behaviors. I would imagine there's epigenetics in there too. But yeah, what do you think about that?
I think it's how we process the loss or the trauma. So you could take a look at that trauma and say, wow, I mean, I almost got blown up. And there are times where people relive these traumas, especially people who come back from war or people who've been back from a bad accident. And they frame it in a way that is terrifying, and that they just keep reliving these things that happened to them, these traumatic incidents. And then if we can instead rewrite the story of what happened, where I was brave, I was resilient, I'm sitting here in a chair right now because I had the knowledge of how to get out of this. I had a student once who was overweight. In her opinion, she didn't seem that overweight to me, but she was healthy and normal to me. But to her, she was overweight. She always had extra weight on her. And one day she opened up to me and she said, when I was 16, somebody knocked on the door and I was at home alone. And it was a man who said that he had to come into the house because he was measuring the hydro. He was doing, you know, when they come in and they see what the number is on the hydro and checking the meter. And she just knew that there was something up with that, you know, that it just didn't sound right to her. And she said, well, my dad's in, you know, the shower right now, and that's where the meter is. You're going to have to come back when my dad's here and available to talk to you. But right now he's in the bathroom. And so she then shut the door and locked it, and the guy left. And it turned out, she found out a few days later that this gentleman was actually a serial killer. And he killed a girl in their community that could have been her. And from that day forward, she decided that, because he had a type, that she would gain weight so that he would not be interested in her. That was her way of protecting herself. And she kept the weight on. Now she's in her 40s, and this was still the story that she was telling herself, that this weight protects her. And I said to her in that moment, I said, actually, you knew the danger. You already knew how to protect yourself. And you did it. You did it. Somehow you saw the signs. So no, you didn't need to put on the weight. You don't need to keep the weight. You already have the knowledge and the tools to protect yourself against predators. And the tears, the release in herself by changing that one story that she had held on to for so many years was just so cathartic for her. And she was finally able to lose the weight after that. But it's this story that we tell ourselves sometimes can be so powerful. And that to her was empowering, that even in the face of what was actual danger, so she found out later, she was so empowered by her own new story after that.
The evidence of her skill set, of everything she was afraid of, she actually did. It is so interesting to see how our biography becomes destiny, how we have an experience of the past that now is like framed in our future as a thing we're always like trying to avoid, but yet we really end up avoiding life. And I see that so much relationally, you know, is that what lives next to the thing you want, love and connection, is also usually your greatest pains. So if you haven't explored those pains, you won't walk towards that. You'll come up with all the reasons, and unconsciously you'll date unavailable people, you'll cheat, you'll lie, you'll do whatever, you'll drink and make bad decisions. But what you're ultimately seeking is trying to walk towards this, but you don't know how. And I think of like how brilliant is the unconscious mind that it puts on weight to try to protect ourselves from being a target. And I could see that obviously is often true for women after they've experienced some sort of abuse or something like that. Like, I'll make myself less attractive, quote unquote, you know, this idea of attraction. Yeah. And I'll protect myself. We like put this layer. But, you know, we talked about this just for a second before we hit record. But then you also have these confounding factors of nutrition. Like, not only am I eating and then keeping weight on, and my body's shifting how it handles food and nutrition, but I'm actually eating highly processed things, high fructose corn syrup, which are biologically designed to hijack my sense of satiety and all of that. So you have like a system that's actually operating against you. But I always think like the unexplored or unresolved trauma or pain or whatever, everyone has the right to whatever their thing is the doorway for the addiction to that type of food or to alcohol or to, because, and I'm really speaking from my own experience of myself, which was like, oh yeah, it was like, I loved chocolate milk, but I only drank it so much in excess. Well, one, sugar's highly addictive, but I used sugar as a way to soothe the experience of not belonging. So it, when I dealt with the belonging part and this idea, I have a similar weight story, is like, I'll just keep weight on, which keeps perpetuating my belonging wound. But I don't know who I am without the struggle. Like, I don't, what is it like to not? And when I finally resolved what was below there, I stopped being in the cycles of putting weight on, taking it off, putting weight on. It was like I had to grieve that that was my mechanism. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because it's like the food and the alcohol is the solution. Mm-hmm. That's the solution. You're feeling a certain way. And the food makes you feel better. The alcohol makes you feel better. That's the solution. And until you actually find a healthier solution, but you need to decide, you need to make that decision that you're not going to be addicted anymore.
You know that feeling you get when you crawl into a freshly made bed of silky bed sheets? It's probably my favorite feeling in the world. I've been traveling a lot lately, and every time I go to sleep in another bed, I miss my home. I miss my cozy earth sheets. I gotta tell you, these are the best high-quality sheets I've ever had the pleasure of sleeping on. And even my wife, Kylie, will agree, there are no other sheets that compare. They're soft, they're silky, and so comfortable, and you literally just melt into them. The reason they're so soft is that they're made from viscose from bamboo fabrics, which is softer than cotton. And as a huge bonus, it's responsibly and sustainably sourced. On top of that, it's temperature regulating, which means it keeps you cool and comfy all night long. And the unbeatable luxury feel helps turn your bed into the most cozy sanctuary ever. And I'm not the only one who's crazy about them. Cozy Earth has been featured on Oprah's favorite list 7 years in a row. So give their sheets or any of their awesome products a try. They have a 10-year warranty on all their products and a 100-night sleep test to try it for 100 nights. And if you don't love it, you get your money back. But I know you'll love it as much as I do. And they're offering you, my listeners, a massively generous 40% off discount. So go to CozyEarth.com and use Mark at checkout for 40% off all their products. That's CozyEarth.com and use the code MARK for 40% off.
You know, there's a, I fell into an addiction during the pandemic of social media. I found because I was home alone, I was isolated, feeling lonely. There I was on the phone all the time and realized after a while, I think that I'm kind of addicted to mm-hmm. what's going on. And it became my solution to the isolation. And so I think we have to be able to find new solutions that can help us, but figure out why. Why am I turning to that as the solution? What is the real reason behind it? You know, for me, it was the isolation. So how do I deal with the isolation and find a new solution? But sometimes we don't know what it is. Sometimes we just feel better with the alcohol or whatever it is. And we don't ever explore mm-hmm. what the act. It's like being a, you know, you need to like be your own functional medicine doctor, right? And figure out what are the underlying causes for the behavior. It's not that the alcohol is addictive. It's that the alcohol is the solution. We need to find a different solution. That's all. And that's what I like about, you know, exploring some of these things. Like, for example, when I'm exercising, I feel great. I feel fantastic. So instead of turning to the phone now, I go and exercise and it's fantastic. And the more and more that I started to wean myself off of this, you know, being on the phone, the better I felt. And I just kept deciding. And like an alcoholic, I think you need to decide either I'm going to be miserable watching this political news show for the next hour, or I'm going to go and exercise, or I'm going to talk to a friend, or I'm going to go for a walk outside in nature, or I'm going to go skiing, or, you know, the more I just have to make a choice and make a decision in that moment. Do I want to feel good or do I want to feel bad? And just like alcoholics have to do that every day, do I want to drink or do I not want to drink? And they make a choice to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's a choice and a decision. And I think every day we need to choose the behaviors, the thoughts, the feelings that put us in a good space. And a lot of the times we're taught that we are just victims of our mental health. Oh, you're a victim, so therefore. But instead, there's a lot you can do. And research shows it's like, you know, 40% of what contributes to our well-being is something that is controllable by us. And that, again, is managing our emotions, managing our cognitions and the way we think about things, and our behaviors. But it's a conscious decision sometimes when you feel addicted, you know, to some of these things that are not good for you.
Which makes so much sense that they are, it's easy to get captured by the doom scroll. It's easy to get captured by, like, I'll go to do something on social media and all of a sudden, like, I'm watching off-roading trucks roll and, like, I'm watching, like, Kids Getting Hurt is a great Instagram account. I sound like a bad person, but it's funny. It's like a really
kids
funny.
Getting Hurt? Did you
yeah,
say
it's called Kids Getting Hurt? And it's like a toddler's getting hit, wow, hitting the baseball into their dad's nuts. And, like, you know, they're falling off things. They're all survivors. Don't worry, everyone. But my point being that there's, like, something about the elation, the emotional sort of extremes of these things that keep us going. And the algorithm now is so good. It actually will just keep feeding you content that will keep you on there. It actually doesn't care who you follow anymore, which is really fascinating. It'll just deliver you more content. And this is why behavior of social media users is changing quite significantly. Like, they don't tend to follow content they consume anymore because the algorithm will just feed them it. And yeah. Being able to recognize, and I always think the best question to ask ourselves is, what in my life do I not have a choice about no longer being in a relationship with? If it's something like alcohol, we'll come up with a reason like, oh, I can't stop drinking. I have a bachelor party and then I have a wedding and then I have it's Wine Wednesday. So we have a logical reason why we're going to continue to do it. It doesn't hurt me, like I'm fine, but we can feel deeper below that we actually have a hard time saying no to it, just like living 3 months of our lives without it. And so I think that is an important question to ask about things like social media and things about anything. Is all of a sudden you're going, if I don't have true choice, then that means I'm in a codependent relationship with that thing. And I'm sourcing my safety. And this is why my wife and I define it in our book as where you're sourcing safety and security from someone or something outside, and it compromises your own needs, wants, and desires. So like you were saying, it's a solution, but it's a solution to something that actually requires life-affirming choices instead of, you know, that binary of choices are either life-affirming or death-affirming. When I used to chew tobacco long, long ago, I remember someone presenting that to me, like, your choice is death affirming. And I was like, oh shit, that's an interesting way. And so we use these coping mechanisms, but what you're talking about and positive psychology really talks about is what are positive coping mechanisms that are life affirming?
Yes, but not only that, I think going back to something you said earlier, the algorithms make it highly addicting.
Yeah.
So, you know, just like they manufacture food in a certain way to make it so addictive that you just can't stop eating, you have to eat the whole bag. And it's the same with social media. And it's the same with some drugs. You know, think about drugs like methamphetamine and, you know, other kinds of drugs are so addictive. So I'm not saying that it's easy to stop being addictive and that, you know, you can just start doing something over here and you're not going to be addicted anymore, you know. But I think you have to almost go through what an addict would go through if you want to stop the things that are really harming your life. If social media and doom scrolling every single day is taking away from you making a living, you know, from you building your business, from you having good relationships with your family, then, and that's how I treated it. I mean, I did hypnosis. I went to counseling. I bought a lockbox to lock my phone up. You know, I did, you know, discontinued all notifications. I mean, I did all the things that an addict would do. So I think it is difficult. And I think that's why people keep doing it, because they don't know how to get out of it. They know they don't want to do it anymore. And that's why I think these, you know, things are so addictive. And that's kind of the definition of addiction, is you keep doing something that you know is harmful, and yet you just, for some reason, keep doing it to yourself. I have a friend who says, well, just stop doing it. It's not that easy.
Right.
It's really not.
If that was true, we'd quit so many things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think you're right with this. I love that your friend said it's, you know, it's life dooming.
Life affirming or death affirming.
Right. Death affirming, right? It's death affirming. Like cigarette smoking or not exercising can also be death affirming, right? So that's really interesting. We don't realize that we're doing some of those things. But then sometimes if you add those life affirming activities into your life, the other things start to fall away. So for me, if I'm up at 5 o'clock, I just get out of bed. I don't scroll. I just decide I'm getting out of bed and I'm exercising. And then I think, oh, great. I have more than an hour, because normally I do like 30 or 45 minutes of exercise. Now I have like an hour and a half of time to exercise and do more, and I can listen to a good podcast or, you know, something that's actually informing me, giving me more information about health or life or business, right? It's all productive work for me after that. And then I don't feel like scrolling anymore. I don't feel like watching that political broadcast on something, because I just feel too good.
I shared recently that I don't watch the news. And I don't do it from a mental health perspective. I just don't find it productive, you know? And often what I'll get in response to that from some people is that it's a privilege to not watch the news. And I thought, this is really fascinating. One person was interacting with me saying, well, I feel guilty not watching it, so I watch it because it's a privilege to not watch it. And I was like, wow, you've like really used virtuosity and righteousness and morality in there to feed the justification of the self-abandonment. Now, granted, I understand that if there is an emergency going on next to you, you need to know what's going on. If there's a war going on in your country, you probably want to know what's going on. So I understand that I don't live in a place where that's happening, and that is a privilege. Okay. Right. And not watching the news doesn't mean uninformed. That's also the sort of misconception. But I think, at what point do we actually recognize that we are often committed to the chaotic feeling of watching these things? That's why doom scrolling is like we're feeding more angry content to people, and it just keeps people addicted, coming back. I need to know what's going on. And we don't realize that our dopamine is being fed with this, and then the self-abandonment is being justified with something like, and the guilt is being justified with this idea of privilege. And I'm not negating the principle of privilege. But what's fascinating is I was watching a therapist recently say, in the whole time that we've been trying to destigmatize mental health, we've actually made mental health worse. In that, yes, there's been more awareness brought forward about mental health and anxiety and depression and all of these things. But what's also happened is that people have developed this therapy language where everything is narcissism, and I have anxiety, and I am bipolar, and I'm ADHD. And so what it's also done is actually made it so that these young people are clinging to this language, where we didn't have this language when we were young. You just like actually fell off your bike. It wasn't called trauma. You know, like I mean, back then, you know, you would just go out, and which I think there's so many funny memes going around now where they're like, wait, so when you were young, you went out on your bike and you just came back before the sun came down? Like, what was the timing? And they're like, between 5 and 9. Between 5 and 9? Like, that's such a broad... But, you know, we had the same thing. It was like you were home by dinner, which was 5:30-ish or something like that. But when you were home, you were off like in the forest doing stuff with your friends. I mean, we were doing some bad stuff.
You know that moment when you land in a new country and you open your phone and nothing? No data, no maps, no way to let anyone know that you've arrived. You're stuck wandering around the airport searching for Wi-Fi or trying to figure out how to buy a local SIM. Usually while jet-lagged and juggling luggage, it's not exactly the dream start to a trip, is it? That's where something like Saily can make a big difference. It's an app that offers eSIM data plans in over 190 countries. So instead of scrambling for a connection, you're online the minute you land. No SIM cards, no waiting in lines, no awkward language barrier at the phone shop. And because it's an eSIM, you only need to install it once. So if you're hopping between countries, you don't have to switch anything out. You just choose a regional or global plan in the app and you're good to go. There are even security features built in, like changing your virtual location or blocking malicious ads, so you can browse with a little more peace of mind too. So whether you're traveling for work, adventure, or just getting out of town for a bit, it's worth checking out.
Get an exclusive 15% discount on Saily data plans. Use code MARKGROVES at checkout. Download the Saily app or go to www.saily.com/markgroves.
One of the worst things for sleep is when you're too hot at night, right? Especially as the summer nights are getting hotter. And also if your mattress is trapping heat, it might be time for a change. Now enter Avocado Green Mattress. It's luxuriously comfortable, naturally breathable, and it's made with certified organic materials. If you've been listening to the pod for a while, you know I'm all about high quality organic products. And I love that Avocado uses certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. They're breathable, chemical free, and perfect for a cooler sleep, especially in the summer. With comfort options from firm to plush, there's truly something for everybody and every sleep style. You can even take their mattress quiz, which is going to match you up with the perfect one for you. These mattresses are made to last. They have high-quality craftsmanship that meets mission-driven sustainability. Avocado isn't just about sleep. It's about a healthier life and a healthier planet. I trust Avocado because it's a certified B Corp and a leader in sustainable practices. Every decision they make, from farm to finish, is rooted in transparency and care. They're not cutting corners on your health or on environmental impact. Avocado mattresses are better for you and better for the planet. The best part about buying one is they have easy financing with Affirm. They offer a sleep trial up to 1 full year, and they have retail locations available so you can try it in person. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and check out their mattress and bedding sale. Avocado, dream of better. But I say all that because I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I remember there was a large controversy in the conversation of psychology that the word trauma was being misused, that we were calling everything trauma. And this became like an online debate I saw between quote unquote therapy influencers, which I was like, I'm going to bow out of this one. I usually bow into most, but I bowed out of that one. But I do think there's a lot of truth to what that therapist was saying, which I wish I could remember her name, but I'll make sure I link it in the show notes. It was such brilliant. It was like, oh yeah, in this like effort to make things better, have we made things worse? And I think if you add social media to that, which is what made this therapy conversation go more viral, where people were being, you know, celebrated for, hey, I have mental health issues. Great. This is all important. I think it's not a binary, what we're talking about. There's complexity to this, but that we actually have maybe gotten a little addicted to being in a state of suffering so that we'll be noticed and we'll be significant, we'll be special. Yeah. I know I set up a few landmines in there so you don't have to walk on them, but what do you think about that?
Well, I think people just want to have control over their lives. And if they can label something and say, oh, right, it's the trauma that's caused all of this, or oh, now I get my behavior because I had this trauma in my life, then it can be useful if it then brings you into action. Mm-hmm. And what my concern is when it makes people helpless. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to Dr. Martin Seligman, who is broadly known as the founding father of positive psychology, about this idea of labeling things. And we had the same discussion with regards to, does it make people feel hopeless? Mm-hmm. So that if I have this, then therefore, for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to live this way because of this diagnosis or label. And what I really hope that people will do is take that information and say, huh, I wonder if that early childhood experience is now affecting my life so much that maybe I need to really figure that out. Do something, go for therapy, get it resolved in my head. Maybe I'll never resolve it in my head, but maybe there's ways that I can release it from my body. We know that the body holds a lot of trauma. So I think that it can be helpful to the sense that, to the degree that, does it get us into action to actually allow us to engage in behaviors that help us, and we feel some sense of agency around our own mental health and improving our own mental health, as opposed to going down that hopeless road. And that's what I feel sometimes, that people say, well, I'm this, so therefore, you know, everything has to change around me. And it's like, well, okay, if you have this diagnosis, what does that mean for you? How are you still going to interact with the world? How can you still maintain your mental health? What are the strategies that you could actually engage in? And how can you make your life better? And I think that's what I hope people will be able to do with it.
Yeah, like the awareness of a potential label doesn't have to be an identity that you stay in. And that's the trap of all labels. That's the trap of the language we say about ourselves when we're young and a parent doesn't show up and we go, well, I guess I wasn't unconsciously, we go, I wasn't worthy of being shown up for, so I must be useless or hopeless or worthless. And so now I'm going to choose my relational dynamics based that continue to validate this unconscious identity. I saw recently, I'm part of a men's group, and one of the guys in the men's group sent this really interesting Instagram account, which I promise is much better than my kids getting hurt one. And the account was this guy who has bipolar disorder, who has committed to like assisted dying. And in the conversations about that, he sent out an invitation to strangers to have dinner with them. So now he's had dinner with hundreds and thousands, I think, maybe getting to thousands, but hundreds of strangers. And he's having these conversations with them, and it's gone very viral, which makes sense. And it has that sort of element to it. But I thought this is really fascinating. We were having a debate in the group because we were talking about like how now this identity has now created this beautiful, strangers are reaching out. And I thought, And he uses the treatment resistant. And I thought, I have a friend who had treatment resistant depression and ended up actually having a radical remission from it due to an MDMA and psilocybin therapy session with their internal family systems. Changed, life changed after doctors and everyone told her, you're destined, this is your life. And so, of course, hopeless doesn't, you know, everything is it, hearing them. But then when she went through this avenue of working with psilocybin and then doing the session, she had a radical remission. And I just thought of this guy when I was reading that. I was like, well, first off, it's like there's no hope that it will ever change. But now it's been the bridge to connection. And wouldn't that be a beautiful story if all of a sudden he says, I'm not going to do it because I had, but maybe he'll do it. But I still thought, like, what a trap this potentially is.
But it sounds like if he's had 1,000 dinners that he's putting off this medically assisted suicide,
all in the countdown,
right?
No.
Oh, it's all in the
schedule.
Okay.
I know.
Because when you think about, because I wonder, So he's still feeling extremely depressed. Is that the diagnosis? Because when we think about when you said treatment resistance, I think having dinner with strangers is a good treatment.
Sounds like one of the best.
It's a good treatment.
You know that saying, the opposite of addiction depression. Is connection? Yeah.
Right. Like that seems like he has found his own treatment, but maybe not. Maybe if he's still
who
feeling
knows? I mean,
connected.
That's the, if he tells but us maybe, he's not going to do it, is the hook gone, you know?
But maybe he's holding on to the story that he is treatment resistant.
That's what I mean.
So rather than receiving all the joy from and the purpose that he's engaged in with all of these dinners that he's having, he's still in the story of, you know, I am hopeless. There is nothing that can be done for me. And therefore, all I can do now is medically assisted in dying. We call it MAID in Canada. And, you know, and that's it. And so that has to be my course. And until he changes the story, which is, wow, look what he has created, you know, for himself, and probably thousands of people are benefiting from his
story. Yeah, for sure. It's going viral for a reason, because I think people can relate to this like generosity of a stranger and the power of it, the power of community to heal things. It's like if you're in a family and you go through a trauma, or you're in a group of friends and there's a trauma you experience and the group of friends says, let's hold this with you. It's going to be alchemized in a very different way. You know, I think when you consider like, what is the stuff that most heals people? It is love. It's connection. It's being held. It's a hug. It's all this somatic experience of love, of emotion, of knowing that you're not alone. And I think we all have this idea of that. We all hope for that. We all hope to have a community like that. And Francis Weller, who's a psychotherapist, has this beautiful quote where he says that we spend our lives looking for a place to belong, but at some point we have to become the place of welcome. And so we go from searching to being the home. And what a beautiful moment that is when we decide to instead of chasing it, we become it. And then what that facilitates for the other people who are chasing it.
Yeah, it's very true. And I think sometimes too, when we have these bad experiences, we don't want to experience them again. Mm-hmm. And so we cut ourselves off and we say, oh, it's not that important. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of love, not that important. I'll just focus over here, because your brain is really saying, you're never doing that again. You're never going to feel that pain again. So better just to stay safe over here. And sometimes I think that can block people from the connection that they're looking for. And they can lead totally perfectly good lives too, doing that as well, but never really fully experiencing the full range of the beautiful life, including all the difficult things that happen. I mean, I think my life has been very rich, and we do explore now the psychologically rich life can be something that leads us to higher levels of well-being than just a joyful life. Mm-hmm. Because when things happen that are good and when things happen that are bad, it still enriches our lives. It still brings us things. I mean, when my husband died, there were people who did things for me that were mind-blowing. That if you had asked me in a million years that this person would come forward and do something that was so huge to help me, I would have said, no, that would never happen. And then stuff like that happened. And you think, wow, like the generosity of a friend to do something like that for me is a powerful, powerful feeling that would have never happened had I not gone through this tragedy. So now I have this tragedy that's caused so much grief. And then I have this beautiful show of generosity and kindness that helped me and my daughters at a time that was so bad, that when I think of that, that the feelings of joy and love, you know, enter my body. Mm-hmm. Again, I would have never experienced that high of a high had I not been at this low of a low. So I think all experiences are valuable. You know, I don't like some of the stuff that's going on right now.
Some of the news is pretty effed up.
Yeah. You were talking about the news earlier and the privilege of not watching the news. And I think, wow, that's an interesting perspective,
right.
Which I appreciate everybody's perspective on things. You know, for me, I say to myself, how will it help me or the world? And I think if you're reading a newsletter that has a compilation of, you know, what's going on in the world, I think that's a lot more effective for me than the doom scrolling and the CNN that just uses the same talking points over and over and over again for, you know, 72 hours kind of thing, which is can be debilitating after a while. But I think I always say to myself, does watching the news improve things for me? It doesn't. It makes it worse. It takes my time away from my business, from my family. It also makes me feel bad. So I'm not able to do as much in my business. My business is helping other people be happier, having higher levels of mental health. My business is helping business people create work environments that improve psychological safety for everybody, thousands of people in the workplace and around the world. So if watching the news takes me away from helping others do that, then no, it's not a privilege. It's not helping. And also, I think to myself, there's nothing I can do. I think, well, what can I do to help the world then if the world is falling apart? I'm much more productive when I focus on that. What am I going to do to help the world? Mm-hmm. And watching the news is not contributing to that. So I sort of see it differently in the sense that, you know, it's more helpful if I'm not watching, and more of a privilege for me to help other people when I'm not watching the news.
Yeah, it's such a great reframe. I think a lot of the time we'll be addicted to the conversation about what's happening in the world while our own world is not in order.
That's right.
And that becomes a bit of a distraction from, I think really brilliantly, unconsciously, a great distraction from the work that we need to do in our own lives. You know, and it's easy to say, I can't do it because something's going on over there. And that could be valid. But also, how often do we, like I was talking to a friend recently who's in her 70s, and she said to me, oh my gosh, did you see the news? Someone was killed like across the country somewhere else in a robbery. And I was like, no, like I don't need to know that. Like it just is so invaluable to, and it will shift, it shifts my like emotional state. And then I'm like, is that actually serving the mission I'm in and what I'm on? And don't get me wrong, I've certainly been captured by emotionality in a lot of things, especially in the last 4 years. But can I decide the nutritional value of the information I'm bringing in so that I can put out higher nutritionally valuable information? So I've not thought about it. So I like that reframe.
That's exactly. And you know, I had a real revelation as I was trying to get off the social media. Because I wasn't addicted to the social media. I was addicted to the feelings that I had when I was watching it. And when I was watching that political news, I was angry. And that was a moment where I said, wow, it's feeding my anger. Mm-hmm. What am I so angry about? And then that was a real pivotal moment for me to say, what's making you angry? And then there was so much that unfolded from there. But again, the watching the social media was the solution, and it was keeping me in anger. But what was I angry about? And when I was able to ask, again, I was my own functional medicine doctor when it came to my own mental health. When I asked about that, then that's when the healing began, because I was able to actually heal what the problem was and what was, you know, what was I so angry about? So, and of course, anger is part of my DNA because I'm Sicilian. So, you know, so
says everyone from everywhere.
Yes.
So we I'm Italian. I just got expressive. Okay. I'm Latin. I'm fiery. That's right. What do Irish people get? I'm Irish. I drink.
You know, for me, forgiveness, it was so powerful. And I know a lot of people say, well, I'm never going to forgive that person. No, I'm not. You know, forgiveness is not good for me. And yet for me, it was so powerful, but I get it. And I'm trying to think, and this is something that I'm working on right now, is there are a lot of people who, I mean, I've seen the power of forgiveness. When I can truly forgive somebody and I can let it go, man, it's gone. Mm-hmm. It's so good when that happens. But there's a lot of people who say, wait, that person abused me. Like what that person did is not forgivable. So therefore, they should not be forgiven. And I don't forgive people to condone what they did.
Right.
I forgive people for me so that I can release it. Then I thought, well, maybe there's another word that we can use to allow people to truly let it go. And I think it could be have something to do with radical acceptance. Like I accept that happened to me. It was not right. And I can see how that person did what they did. So I might have some sort of empathy for that person or whatever understanding. I don't condone it. I don't want them to come near me again. They're not going to be in my life, but I need to move on now and leave that, you know, wherever I'm going to leave it, but outside of me. So I'm not angry about it anymore. And so I think that a lot of, you know, what happens to us in mental illness is this idea that we can't let things go.
Yeah. And then somehow letting it go is condoning or saying that was okay, which is such a misconception. It's not true. And that's what makes us hold on to it. You know, even the anger, you know, I've worked with people where years after they go through a breakup where someone cheated on them, their story is like, look how you left me destroyed. And so they actually can't pick up their lives. They can't find a new loving relationship because then the evidence isn't still here of the rubble you left behind. And I'm like, okay, well, first off, that's like not the actual best. If you want to get back at them, get like, I always say, like, don't just get a revenge body, get a revenge soul. Like I'm so alive that they can't help but see it, but do it for you. Like use the anger, use it as a way of transmuting into expansion and growth. And like, how hot is it when someone's in alignment with their purpose and has access to their voice? Like we all know when someone's like, that's not okay how you spoke to me. We're kind of like, yeah, what's up now? Like it's hot. And so that become that person, become the person who has boundaries, who doesn't deviate. And, you know, and that's we were talking about, you know, earlier, it's like, how do you hold before we hit record, but it's like, how do you hold the complexity of having gone through something and using what you've gone through to transform your life without saying that it was okay what happened? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when I studied positive psychology, when I did my master's degree, I found out that women were twice as likely as men to become depressed. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why? Why is that? And luckily, there was a scientist at Yale University who actually delved into that and said, shouldn't we figure out why women are, you know, have twice the incidence of depression as men? And she determined that it was rumination, that women have more of a ruminative style. And so something happens and they think about it over and over. And this is why people, even years later, are still running it through their head. And I thought, well, I'm going to write a course on how to cure rumination because when I learned that, I ended up training myself to stop ruminating because I always say like I won a gold medal in the rumination Olympics, you know, in the 90s. Yeah. Like I ruminated about everything. I just kept thinking about stuff over and over.
I used to be a ruminator.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I did a survey before I created this course and I asked, what are you ruminating about? And the number one thing was an injustice, mm-hmm. an injustice. And so that's why, you know, when you think about women who were cheated on, what are they still thinking about? Well, that guy, that was an injustice and I deserve to have justice because what he did was wrong and it was a betrayal. And that's why sometimes forgiveness can be very powerful, because you can say, okay, well, you know, I forgive that person, mm-hmm. and I'm going to let it go. But I think there has to be an acceptance of, yeah, it happened to me. It's not right that it happened to me, but I understand that people are flawed, that they do things that are wrong, that they might not be capable. You know, I remember my mother did a number of things that I really carried with me into my adulthood. And one day I just thought, I need to forgive my mom. And what I came to the realization to was, she was not capable of emotionally showing up the way I needed her to be in my life. And when I kind of forgave her for that, to say, Mom, you know what? You just didn't have the emotional capacity to do the things that I needed. And that's okay. That's all right, Mom. And that was so powerful for me to see the failures that people can have, that people are not perfect. Right. People are not always good at everything. Yeah, they screw up. And maybe they are narcissists and mean people and cruel people. But if I can connect empathetically somehow, not empathetically, but maybe with compassion.
Yeah, which doesn't mean permission or,
no,
or
not,
condoning.
Not permission, but if I can say, yeah, that person, like, they're super mean, and wow, that's very sad for them. That they go around in their life being mean to people. I don't have that. I don't have that. They do. That's really sad for them. I'm going to empathize with that or have some compassion for that, and then let it go. Because I'm only hurting myself when I keep thinking about it over and over. Mm-hmm. It only hurts me. They're having a great time over there. Like, you know,
they're drinking Mai Tais, celebrating and can't.
They're all, yeah.
They're not even thinking about it. Is it great?
I know
it.
Yeah,
way easier to be a narcissist.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I thought this, like, somebody did something that was really mean to me not long ago, and I was so mad about it. I was so upset. I thought, this is really, really awful. And then I saw them living their lives, and I'm like, they don't even care. So why do I care? Like, why should I care anymore? They've gone off to live their life, and they're all happy and doing stuff. So why do I have to still be sitting here in the anger when they don't care? So it's, I think this idea of letting go is can be so powerful.
So powerful. It just releases us. We almost like let go of an anchor, and then now we can be with life better informed and with better direction. I absolutely love you and the way you see the world. And I know we could talk for hours, let's be honest. But for people who are listening, first, thank you for being on, for, you know, being so generous with your time. And for people listening, where can they find more of you? Where can they find more about The Rumination? Also, your book, I know, is on Amazon, but it's everywhere.
If they want to read my book. And I wrote about confidence because I honestly think that when we can live a courageous life with confidence, we go out and do the things we want to do. So yeah, so that's why I wrote the book. But they can reach me at louisajewell.com. Jewel spelled J-E-W-E-L-L with two L's. And they can find out about me. And I'd love to hear from people. I'd love to hear what they thought about some of the things I said. Because I think through connecting, through engaging with people, I learned so much about what's needed in the world. And I love to connect with people and see what's going on with them and see where we can take things. The Canadian Positive Psychology Association is at cppa.ca. Mm-hmm. And they can find out more about what we're doing at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association. So yeah, that's how you can get in touch with me.
You're a gift to the world. I appreciate you. And thanks for your time.
Mark, you are a gift, and I so love you, and thank you so much for having me on the show. I just love talking to you, and as you say, we could have taken a few more hours, but
100%.
Next time. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.